Blog Talk Radio. We are not alone. And welcome to another episode of Contact Radio, featuring Leslie Mitchell Clark and co-host Wes Roberts, where we explore ufology and beyond with the help of the world's foremost experts. And without further ado, here's your host and your guide, Leslie Mitchell Clark. And a very, very good autumnal evening to all of you wonderful people out there throughout the globe. This is Leslie Mitchell Clark, and once again, you are tuned into Contact. And we're so happy that you could join us this evening. We have a wonderful guest for you. By the way, I should mention, we are all the way live tonight. We have had a few pre-recorded shows in recent weeks simply because our guests have been either in the UK or Australia or elsewhere. Tonight, we're all the way live. We're on Eastern Daylight Time still for another week or so. And our guest is the fascinating Carl Dorey. And Carl is an experiencer. He is a contactee. His history includes what we believe to be participation in some parallel space program, not unlike Captain Randy Kramer, Captain K. And so we're going to be continuing to talk about Carl's experiences, recovered memories from hypnotherapy, and all that kind of stuff. So we are certainly glad that you could join us this evening. And Wes Roberts is with us, my trusty co-host, but he is at a remote location. I'm going to see if he's there. Hey, Wes, is that you on the line?
Hello there, Leslie. It is indeed.
All right. Well, I'm so happy you could be with me this evening, even though you are at a remote, undisclosed location. I don't mean to sound so secretive.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we have been, boy, didn't we have a weekend. We, Wes Roberts and myself, we're presenting a talk about the abduction experience, contact with extraterrestrials, and the use of hypnotherapy. And we delivered this talk to the Canadian Hypnosis Conference, the second one. And it was really quite a wonderful experience. We had a number of hypnotherapists like myself who are interested in continuing on with the kind of work that I do, and I was so very pleased by that, by the interest. Wasn't that a wonderful experience?
Oh, it was. It was, too. As Leslie said, this is our second kick at the can, and we had a slightly larger audience, which is not to say large, which is fine, very intimate. We have a nice presentation that we've created that augments what we say during such a workshop. And certainly for hypnotherapists and other professionals and anyone interested, Leslie talks about all the facets of this process, from the assessment of a person like myself down to an actual appointment, and all the way the follow-through to where somebody is able to safely do away with fear and integrate his experiences.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it was quite a wonderful time, and there were many renowned hypnotherapists at the conference, Dr. Georgina Cannon, Will Horton, who is essentially the founder of neurolinguistic programming. He's based in Florida, so we don't get to see him as often as we would like. So it was just a really wonderful weekend, and we got to hobnob with fellow wizards.
And, you know, also, and we can't let the cat out of the bag, but we had a chance to be interviewed by another professional, and we hope to be on her network soon.
Very soon. Yeah, it was wonderful, wonderful day. Anyway, I can see by my little virtual switchboard that I believe Carl is chimed in, so I'm going to see if I can pick this up, and hopefully that's him. Hey, Carl Dorey, is that you?
Yes, it is me.
Oh, welcome back to the show, Carl. It's when we communicated earlier, you mentioned to me that you thought it was December of last year that was the last time you were on the show, and I must admit my records are not what they should be, but I can't believe it's actually been that long. I mean nearly a year, really. Is that the case, do you think, Carl?
Well, I checked my records, and that was the last time there.
Wow!
So that may not be the case. So we'll work some of the stuff. Last time, the last show that was recorded ended with me not remembering after I left the. I believe it was after I left the flying service part of it. After the accident.
Right, right. That may have been the last time. Now, the last date that I see for you here when you joined us was December 28th. So, but that's still way too long. So we have to have you on more often than that. That's kind of ridiculous. But anyway, we're absolutely thrilled that you're joining us this evening, and we are live, folks, all the way live. So, if you would like to call in at any point during the show and ask Carl a question, you may do so. If you are calling from within Canada and elsewhere, Europe, elsewhere, please use our computer line, which is 424-220-1861. And if you are calling in from the U.S., we have a toll-free line for you, 888-891-3884. So there you go. Well, Carl, since last December, we've had a number of further sessions. And what would you like to – so many things have been disclosed. I hardly know where to begin. But what would you like to talk about this evening?
Well, to go any further, you'd have to go into the next – they gave me another job. And we found out what that other job was.
Mm-hmm.
And the other me, rather, he liked it. It was, I believe it was in the Los Alamos area,
mm-hmm.
in working as an Air Force uniform.
Mm-hmm.
But
wow.
I wasn't flying things. I was in an office, uniform or not, and I got to do out-of-body work. It's something like flying, and this is, I didn't like find out this myself. It seems
mm-hmm.
I was doing psychic assassination, psychic killing.
Yeah.
I don't know where they were or who exactly. I only wanted to remember two of them.
Yeah.
For this, it's a bit too much. But what I can, besides that, what we are able to do outside of our body, if you're trained and know what to do, is really amazing.
It is amazing. And just to recap for our listening audience, Carl was just beginning where we had really left off the last time he visited Contact. And as I mentioned in the intro, Carl has had encounter contact experiences since he was a small child. And in his tween years, he began to be sort of inducted into a military system, if you will, that seems to be operating within U.S.-Canadian controls, but yet also with extraterrestrial involvement as well, sort of a secret parallel space program, if you will. And Carl was brought along, trained up in a kind of a military way, and eventually was trained to fly craft, which is an interesting thing. We might talk about that a bit later because he's had some more flying recollections. And there was a terrible, terrible accident that resulted in the death of his friend. And Carl himself, after recovering from traumatic injuries, was then reassigned, as he mentioned, not flying, and was involved in some type of I guess you could call it some type of extreme remote viewing, but it's really beyond that because you were really bilocating, weren't you, Carl? It was kind of a physical experience.
Well, you can you can fly like Superman, get there even faster, but you can't lift anything or do too much, except if you know what you're doing, I seem to be able to take over someone else's body for a short time and get access to their mind so they can't remember. I don't know how to do this. I don't know if I want to remember how to do this.
Yeah.
And if I want to get out of my body much more, I may have some baggage out there, let's say.
Yeah.
So, but another weird part of it is once you're out there, you can walk on the ground, bounce like you're Bugs Bunny, but then with your will or intent or however this works, go through solid objects or somehow go from point A to point B, which is thousands and million miles apart. Instantaneously.
Right, but at the speed of thought. At the speed of thought, really,
yeah.
Right?
Now, the only control is that I'm not the only one who is doing this. And over time, if I can remember this and tell you this, that means there's new ideas, techniques, and technology probably out there that if someone like myself did try to do anything bad out there, there's probably some controls and guards in place.
Indeed.
Go ahead.
Did you feel when you were doing this work, Carl, did you feel as if it was valid defensive work? In other words, something that was necessary as far as what was going on, you know, politically or within the disclosure movement or within various conflicts that are going on within the governments?
I have little information. One job was having to do with bombs, and I did something to the bombs, and that's where I used the guard in the truck to do something to some very big bombs, and that may have been for the alter ego me. He liked doing this. This was great. This was fun. But me finding out about the other side of it well, it's there.
Yeah.
It's good. It's bad. It's mine.
Carl, do you think you were the only one doing this work, or was there some kind of a team? And if so, how did the process occur? Did you go into a trance state? Did you have help from some type of mechanical thing or electronic thing?
I do remember in one of the sessions when we were teenagers, our first episode, getting out of our bodies, we had a little bit of help from the teacher. It's a hybrid humanoid. And this was great. We were upside down, sitting on the ceiling, seeing our bodies like it's a opaque, clear jello. And you could put your hand through the ceiling, through other people's opaque jello. But he didn't want us leaving the room, so we didn't stay up there too long. So we had to go back on our bodies. And in another case, in another case, I was practicing much older in an Asian-based type city and learning how to, they're lying in bed, learning how to leave my body and go through the walls, hop around, a car ran through my body. I thought it would hurt. Nothing happened. But it was a learning. So, basically, it looks like all of us, all the 12 people in our class, got some form of this. Now, I would not doubt that if some people were better at it, they'd be given certain jobs. Other people not so good at it may not, but they have to see how good you are.
Yeah. Wow. Wes, are you absorbing this, and do you have any input here? Has anything similar occurred during your experiences?
I would have to say that Carl and I differ in the, let's say, the timbre and depth of some of our experiences. What I can talk to in general is that this kind of ongoing assessment of experiencers like us, I think is a lifelong thing. And you and I, Leslie, actually talked about this today in our workshop and when we were interviewed about periodically being called into a kind of council and saying, you know, did you get it? You know, have you got this lesson? Did it take? Did what we've been doing with you take? And are you ready to move forward? So that's a similarity that comes to mind at first.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And certainly maybe, now this is not, obviously this is beyond remote viewing, or is it? Now you've done remote viewing, Wes. I have not. Do you actually have experiences where you can slip out of your body, as in astral projection? What Kyle is talking about?
In remote viewing, yeah, you could slip out of your body in remote viewing. You wouldn't have a physical body per se. It sounds to me like what Carl was saying is perhaps he did have a physical body as well, and then we're talking by location. But, you know, I don't know if that's what he went through or not, but certainly remote viewing, if you reach the let's say, top tier, the top threshold of it, you would go to the location that you're about to view and do it in 3D.
So, Carl, when you were doing this particular kind of assignment, without dwelling on the content of all of your assignments, how did you find your target? I mean, say let's talk about the bomb defusing or whatever you were doing in that instance. How did you get the information of where to go and who to sort of slip in?
All right. In that procedure, before you go into, it's an office in a building, you go to a living room with a nice curved comfy couch, and a man comes in. He brings you, in the other instances, he brings you a sealed, clear, the papers are, you have some papers and pictures in some sealed, clear plastic. You open it up, you read your basic instructions, names, face, and you sit back and you relax and you're off. And I don't remember doing that with the one with the truck, but with the one with the other cases, that is what's how it worked. So the Alan part of me, he knows how to do this, and I think he quite enjoyed it. So this was easy for him.
And you're speaking of sort of an aspect of yourself when you say the Alan part. You're speaking of the aspect of yourself that was involved in these and other activities.
Yes, I know it was. I don't understand fully how it worked. It was, they made two people, me and Alan, 354. Mm-hmm. So when we were away, and when he was out, when Alan was Alan, when he came back during the operational times, I couldn't remember this. This was not, I wasn't allowed. So let's say I'm gone for 17, 20 years, whatever. I come back a few hours later, but time-wise, the other part of me has been doing something for 17 years or so. So I can't remember this because it may screw up time.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, this gets weird. No.
So it's sort of a paradox, I guess, is what you're talking about, but but you are one soul, one consciousness, and yet sort of the hardware, I guess, the hardware of your psyche was either programmed or incited in some way to create this disparity, this sort of division. Now, also, Wes, I've heard you talk about feeling disassociated from yourself in that way, and I've heard you refer to yourself as that guy when you've had some experiences. Do you think that this process of, do either of you think that this process of dividing your consciousness in a way is part of, or is the way that the extraterrestrial beings travel, say, without craft? Do you think this is normal to them to have a psyche that can do this?
For my part, I think it is, and I suspect, and it's just a suspicion at this point, that they, those of us who encounter them and who are still around and integrated and moving forward and aware, are being taught to understand that not just necessarily by location, but we're multidimensional beings, mm-hmm. and we can shift our, let's say, framework of consciousness from one of those beings to another, although in normal circumstances, I'm Wes. But mm-hmm. There's, you know, 12 different Weses out there, and each one of them is perhaps living a full life, perhaps in an alternate universe, perhaps in the same one. And when you shift to that, that's kind of why I think, for me, I think of it as that guy. It's like that other Wes guy.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that, Kyle? Do you think that this kind, that this is the, what you learned or what you were able to do is a normal way of operating for some of the extraterrestrial beings, that they can, in fact, be maybe in stasis somewhere and projecting their consciousness to multiple places at multiple times?
From the stuff I'm reading, that it's a very good guess. I know
mm-hmm.
that for certain contacts with a certain person, the contact between distance is instantaneous, and I don't need the body. I can just be there in thought, and they can pick me up. And
mm-hmm.
I do have had some odd one or two. I can be Alan. If a part of me is Alan, and I may have another part of me from the Pleiades called Butch. But I'm not sure if this is real, but this has come up that I'm also another person from the Pleiades who I'm having experience here, and if I get too close to the Butch personality, he has a very nice wife, which he loves, and we get caught up in that.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. Well, you know, this is no more difficult, I think, to believe or understand than the idea of past lives, multiple lifetimes. Because, and we were talking about this a lot today, Wes and I were with various groups, but, you know, when we think of time, obviously time can be manipulated, because both yourself, Carl, and Randy Kramer, and also, is it Timothy Good, the third guy, all of you have experienced that manipulation of time, where you were basically, when you stopped working in your appointed task, you were basically reset. So time is not, it's not linear. It's not, a past life isn't necessarily a past life. It could be a concurrent life. It could all be happening kind of at the same time, which is sort of what, you know, Bashar says, obviously, Daryl Anka's wonderful being that he channels, and also in the Seth material, going way back, you know, to the 60s, where Jane Roberts was channeling Seth, this idea of multidimensionality. So I kind of think that all that's going on here is a certain awareness of your capabilities, and in your case, a certain talent for doing this particular kind of thing. And
it looks like at 6, they said I had the basics for it.
Mm-hmm.
By 8, they did something energetically, spiritually to me. 11, they took out the brain out of my head, did something, and put it back in again, and I could communicate with them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one or a couple of implants, of course. So ability, yeah, built in, but they probably also added some hardware to make it easier.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's really fascinating. I mean, even, you know, Randy Kramer, we talk about him a lot because there's a lot of experiences that you guys share. Now, you know, he's talked about hardware too being involved, and exactly what you have just said. You know, I think I asked him the same kind of question. I said, is everybody able to do this kind of thing, either, you know, pilot a craft, a psionic craft, you know, mentally? And he said there are varying abilities, that some people have an effortless time mastering the psionic controls of a craft or the bilocation or whatever you wish to call it. And some people have less ability, but they get some help with mechanics. And, you know, Randy Kramer himself said that when he had to pilot a craft, you know, he had to wear a kind of a helmet that helped with the interface. He doesn't consider himself one of these great, you know, a person that was as talented with that kind of stuff as I think that you are naturally, because you were a pilot, you were a flyer.
Actually, the first, it seems, before they put me into my partner got into the program for flying, but 94-95, we were taken to some type of, I don't know where we were, but our test, I believe our test to get in was we had to put on, it looked like an old type of big helmet with a few antenna and stripes on it, with some weird eye thing over the top. And what we flew with on mine looked like a black ski box that you put on your car. And you could see it in your head. We could control it with our mind and see it in our head. It was very fun. Then we were shown an office, and then we got to, I believe, later the paperwork was done, and we were picked up, and we got to go for the training.
Yes, yes. And, you know, tell us a little bit about, now, when we had a session recently, and I like the sessions where you talk about flying. I guess I'm just obsessed with it. Sorry. I guess I wish
right.
I could do it. This is I can, you know, I can only imagine how incredible that must feel. So, tell us a little bit about the controls of the. You were on a small, I guess it was a small. It sounded like a kind of a shuttlecraft the last time we had a session, and you were in some kind of a testing or training mode where you had to do a little solo flight, I think. Tell us a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind, Carl.
Sure. Basically, this was a single seater, and it was like a small, thick disc. It was a sort of a V like marking where the door is. But I believe inside there's no windows. What you basically had was the computer connected up to your mind. And what I saw in it, you hear, see, feel, everything, was it's like a wide V cut off, and you have instruments. It's like you don't physically touch. Your hands are touching something where they're actually on, but to control the screen, imagine getting rid of your mouse, and you're looking at the screen, at something on your computer screen, and just thinking of red or blue. And when you do that, you turn on an application. That opens up. Then just by concentrating on another part of that box, you can move things. So that's what it's like. Now, at the bottom of this, at a nice big wide window, I believe it was Saturn, and the ice was amazingly beautiful. But at the bottom of this, for the main controls, it looked like a sliding ring, and there was symbols on it. I remember about three symbols clearly. One was like a stylized, like a bear sitting down. One with a angles, basically one like a symbol indicating planet and movement. So there's two different symbols. And so by basically putting your intent on a certain symbol and thinking it will lit up a red, for example, it turns on in your screen, in your mind. And you can hear anything in your head. They can have great sound systems in them. And basically the hand on the right, I believe, I'm not quite sure, but it's for the acceleration up and like is for the acceleration to go mm-hmm. and control. So your left hand is a touch ball, half ball mouse type thing, where if you want to go up, you touch the top of the ball, you squeeze your right hand and something like that, and you go straight up effortlessly. If you are at a control panel, I remember being at a control panel while Jeff was driving, and I wanted to see an island out like miles away. In my vision, I didn't need binoculars. I saw the beach and the palm trees and everything while we were doing what? Mach 1, 2, or 3, no, easily, no problem.
Wow.
And a real quick interruption. Sorry, Leslie, just to let you know that the phone lines have opened up, and we actually have one caller who has just phoned in.
All right. So let me pick up this call, Carl, and we deal with this, we'll get right back to your story. I want you to tell our listening audience about the mothership or the space station that was like a metallic ball that we talked about before.
Okay.
Let's answer the call, see what's going on.
Okay. All right.
I think my computer's answering the call. It's trying to, at any rate.
I will also take a shot at, there we go, I think we're triggered.
Okay, good evening, you're live on Contact, hello.
How you doing?
Great, thank you so much for calling in. Did you have a question for Carl Dory?
Actually, I just, maybe not so much of a question, it's trying to understand and, or maybe he kind of maybe experienced something like this. My first sighting back in 1976, excuse me, I'm very nervous right now.
Oh, don't be nervous. What's your name?
Todd.
You can give us a fake name if you want, just something to call you.
Okay, it's Todd.
Okay, Todd, thank you so much for calling in. Don't be nervous. You're among friends. Believe me, there's nothing you could say that would startle us, any of us. So just, go ahead and let us know what's on your mind.
Just something that I've, I've kept. I'm 49 years old now, and something I've kept with me point in time. It's just a sighting that I had back, I guess my first one that I can remember of, back in 1976 when I was 10 years old. I grew up in Scarborough, Ontario, and, every night in the summertime after school, me and my friends, we did the same routine, and then at the end of each night, we were just lying on the hill and look up at the sky and wasn't really interested or knew anything about UFOs or anything like that back then. I just lying there one night, and then I looked up and I saw your typical V-shaped craft. It was five lights, one in the center and two on each side, and up in the stars. But what confused me, a few things, is while watching this, because it boggles my mind to this day, and it doesn't even seem logical why it happened. Like the way it was moving, it wasn't moving over any star at all. It was moving around the stars. It's like the stars were in its way, and it was just moving very slowly. There was no change in speed whatsoever, and I followed this for at least 3 to 5 minutes until I couldn't see it any longer. And it makes me really nervous to this day why it was just going around the stars and not a single star. And our normal routine, 9 boys, kids, 10 years old, everything was a competition. And every night when we did that, as long as it wasn't raining and stuff is, but we were still outside sometimes when it was raining. We ran to the front door of this building that we lived in because it was a competition. The last one there was, get in the elevator, push all the buttons. And the thing is after I saw this craft, I don't remember. All I remember is waking up in my bed the next day.
Oh, boy. Wow. Well, that's certainly indicative of perhaps a little more having gone on than your conscious mind is allowing you to recall. Wes and Carl, do you guys have any comments you'd like to share with Todd about his experience?
Go ahead, Carl. You first. You're the
go
guy,
ahead.
Please.
Okay. I sort of have to know more, but there's several possibilities of more than that. They control over you. If you saw them, they allowed you to see them. There
Right.
might be more going on. And if
mm-hmm.
there is more going on, you will probably have some strange dreams that you've never forgotten.
Oh.
Now, these dreams may not be totally real, but something happened, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had, yeah, that's one of the, one main thing. Every night I have, my dreams are weird. Everything is weird. And they're, I actually, you know, one saying I've kind of said, like, when I fall asleep at night, I wake up. When I wake up in the morning, I fall asleep, because that reality seems more realistic to me. I can, when I'm in the dream state, and I've heard about the lucid dreaming and stuff like this, I have all the senses. So I can feel hot, cold, wind, if someone's touching me or something's touching me, I can, but everything just seems more realistic than, you know, what I feel when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Indeed. Wes, what do you think about? You can probably relate to what Todd is saying, eh?
Oh yes, yeah, 100%. We were presenting earlier today, Todd, and we did a workshop on hypnosis and abductees and experiencers, of which I'm one. And I, for years, and it's calmed down quite a bit. For years, suffered from not sleeping properly, even being afraid to go to sleep. It's not, you know, like not like a normal human being. It's like, you know, I'm a grown-up who's afraid to go to sleep, and I'm having experiences that aren't dreams because I know the difference between dreams and experiences. And I would have to agree with our guest Carl in saying that you were probably pointed out, either you came to their attention or they came to your attention, but generally speaking, this is not an accidental thing. And they may or may not be involved with you to this day, and it doesn't mean it's a bad thing. Trust me. I have grown immensely from my experiences. So in my case, it's been mostly a positive ride.
Okay. Yeah, I
Todd,
just, I'm trying to – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you, are any of – now you have a lot of siblings. Did your siblings – all see this phenomena as well, and do any of your siblings have the same kind of feelings that you do and the same sleep issues, or have they admitted that to you?
Well, it was nine of my friends. I was on the very end of the line as we laid down on the hill. My friend closest next to me, I won't use his name. But I did point out to him, because I wanted somebody else to see this. And so I banged him on the side, and I told him to look up in this general area and stuff. And I said, do you see it moving? Please say you see it moving and stuff. And he said he did see it. And we drew the exact same thing. It wasn't a hard shape to draw anyways, but we both drew the exact same thing. But the thing is like I said, I don't remember getting off the hill and running to the front, to the door. All I remember is waking up the next morning. And even the next day, there was no, like, okay, go to my friend that was beside me that saw it too and ask him more about it. I just, like, it was there in the back of my mind, but not quite clear. And it wasn't until, and this is quite a long time ago, and it just, you know, later on in life, it just started coming more and more clear, and just puzzling because of the way I saw the craft moving through the stars. It's just, it's completely not logical.
And well, no, it's not. Yeah, it's anything but logical. But I think I would have to agree with Carl in that if you had a sighting, it was because they wanted you to see them. And the not being able to remember the details after the sighting, also being outside. I know Carl has had, I don't even know, and Wes, I don't know even how many experiences as kids where they were outside playing or doing this or that, and suddenly an experience occurred where they saw a craft, and then until hypnotherapy, you know, the rest is kind of a blank. So I would say, first of all, do not worry. Don't, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. If you ever did want to explore this further, I'm very close to Scarborough, and please feel free to contact me anytime you wish, Leslie at lightworkhypnosis.com. And if you ever do want to experience this, I mean, if you ever do want to explore this experience, you know, we can do so in a safe, therapeutic environment where it could only be positive.
No, that's what I, after all these years, I decided that's what I've decided upon. Like everybody, not everybody, but the few people I have talked to about it have always, for some reason, tried to steer me away from doing any type of regression or hypnotherapy.
Oh.
And it's something I just need to know because I've had other experiences, and you know, 3 years ago was my latest one, and all of them include missing time.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so
that really sounds very.
Like to get to the bottom too.
Yes, and you know, and if there's nothing there, there's nothing there. But at least you would know. And the fact is, I think that both Carl and Wes would agree that knowing is better. And then you can integrate
mm-hmm.
these experiences, and there's really nothing to be afraid of. You know, Todd, how many people have had contact? Just what we know of, maybe just in North America alone, more than 13 million, 14 million people. That's like the size of New York City. And, you know,
wow.
The real experts like Dr. John Mack and the real experts, you know, speculated that as many as 3/4 of the people on the planet have had experiences. So
wow.
You really are not alone. And so we can explore that anytime you wish. Guys, did you want to say anything else to Todd before we let him go?
Yeah, I would love to. I'm certainly available for any chat up that you would like, Todd. I waited almost 25 years from my first
wow.
consciously recalled experience before I found Leslie. So I have had consciously recalled experiences and under hypnosis, 4 years of hypnosis, lots and lots of sessions. And I'm, you know, the better person for it, certainly the more integrated person for it. And I have to function out there like we all do. And my function is a college contract teacher. So I really have to be
mm-hmm.
grounded. And I am
mm-hmm.
very grounded. And so I'm also available for a chat up should you decide you want to talk to folks first.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Got to start somewhere. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Sure.
Carl,
mm-hmm.
would you like to speak about your experience a little bit and how you feel now after a lot of recovered memories?
I needed to get this out. The side effects in me from everything was not good. There's a few left, but now I'm much better. And well, it's back there and. You have to get it out. If anything happened, bad or good, whatever, get it out. It'll help you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm open for whatever.
Well, that's wonderful,
been long
Todd.
Enough.
Yeah, it has been, and there's nothing to be afraid of. It's mostly the hypnosis is a very pleasant process, so you're not made to re-experience anything traumatic. That's a kind
mm-hmm.
of a misnomer. People believe that in order to process an experience and release it, you have to, you know, really go through the whole thing in a nuts and bolts kind of way. But in effect, if there's anything upsetting, I simply allow you to become an observer. And it's a very benign, that's how we do it now. You know, 20 years ago we didn't do it that way, but that's how we do it now. And it's just as effective in processing an experience to be an observer as to be, you know, dragged through the whole thing, which I simply would not do. The idea is not to cause more pain or trauma, but to relieve what's already happened. So,
sure. Excellent.
Do get in touch, Todd, and
yep.
we send you all our best and all kinds of positive light, and we're here anytime you need us.
Excellent. Thank you very much, guys.
You're very welcome.
Thank
you for calling, Todd. Okay, good night.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was a very interesting call. We're going to have a little word from our sponsors right at the moment, and then we will be back with Mr. Carl Dorey.
Contact Radio would like to thank its generous sponsors, James Borg and Euphoria and the Euphoria Chronicles, Variety Store Productions and Mr. Greg Summer. That's VarietyStoreProductions.com. The 2015 Canadian Hypnosis Convention. And the 2016 Alien Cosmic Expo. And also EarthMysteryNews.com. Thank you for your incredible support. We could not do this without you.
All right. I think we'd also like to shout out to Patrick White of Conspiracy Culture and his lovely wife, Kadena. And they are bringing in the amazing Graham Hancock, one of the most revolutionary archaeologists to come on the scene, the guy that has dispensed with all of the bad timelines of ancient Egypt and dated the Sphinx to its true date, which is about 10,000 years older than previously thought. So Graham Hancock is coming in. Wes, do you remember the date on that? Is that November 14th or December 14th? I can't recall.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I'm sorry. I don't, but hopefully I'll get on the stick and put it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/contactRS for a radio show.
Yes, we'll put it up on our Facebook page. But in the meanwhile, you can always go to conspiracyculture.com, and you're looking for the Graham Hancock event. Okay. All right, Carl. So we're back now to talk about, I hope, this space station that, and this is again part of the same recovered memory when you were doing your solo flight, maybe one of your first solo flights, your exercise training, and this whole training flying thing was being conducted out of some type of ball-shaped metallic space station. Is that correct, Carl?
Yes. When me and Jeff first got, basically, we were picked up in the. I was living in Brampton, Ontario, Canada. Then I was picked up, changed. I became the other person on it, and we drove the car out of town north. Then we went up the hill and flew to a, let's say, mid-sized craft where me and Jeff, we met an officer at a desk. We signed our life away for the next many, many years. We changed our clothes and got into a smaller craft within it. It's like it held 12, 14 people. Then we left that craft, and as we were leaving, we didn't even leave the atmosphere. It seems like after we left the craft, X seconds later, we simply popped out of existence here on Earth, and we were right beside, I believe it's Saturn and its rings. It was really nice, beautiful. And there was a round space station. It didn't look like the most huge or beautiful thing, but it was metallic. It had rectangular doors along the body of it. And as we entered, as we got close, one of the doors opened, and there was room inside the hangar for about five of these ships. And it docked by, there's a tube out with an end that met exactly at the end of your craft. And once the pilot, once it attached, there's an airlock. We opened the door and we left. And we went into the station. It looked crowded. Good enough to walk in for humans, but for the amount of people in there, it looked very crowded with the people. Mm-hmm. As we left the ship, we were given a little bag with something, and I believe something like a tablet, an 8 or 9 inch tablet computer. And then we had to go to a welcoming, a briefing thing.
Let me interject, Carl. This was years and years before tablets were ever commonplace this was unknown technology at the time that this occurred.
Yeah.
Okay, carry on.
Basically we were welcomed by I think it was a tall gray, maybe some human, basically saying welcome. I don't remember much of it. Then we got our quarters. Me and my partner got their small quarters, 7 to 8 feet width, about 10, 12 feet. Then you have a door, and you have another area where there's two bunks where you sleep. So basically, in the living area, the you have lots of storage in the wall, and with like the chairs and the table came out. But there is another area of it for when you get some time off. You can go to a lounge. Let's call it a lounge. And I'm not sure how many chairs, 8 and 9 chairs. Let's say 10. And they look quite comfortable, but they're built so that if you have easy access to the computer attaching to your mind, you just sit back, relax. And if you want to go, let's say you book it for an hour, you can go to Paris, France for an hour, or to the beach, or to the resort, or whatever you want. This technology can also be used for training and courses for flight or whatever you want, because once you're in there, it's like a whole reality where everything you touch, you feel touch, you see. There's heat, there's everything.
This sounds not unlike, the kind of, the kind of device that Randy Kramer talked about that he and his fellow officers used for leisure time. It sounds very similar, like it's an immersion, kind of a reality immersion thing where you're just in there.
Well, what it is instead of having to wear a 3D helmet over your head and wear the gloves, they access the information accesses in your head directly to what you hear, see, smell, everything. So that if you make a mistake on training, and if you hurt your finger, you will actually feel like you hurt your finger and learn.
Yeah, wow. So it's beyond. It's a true psionic, a true neural interface of some sort, and obviously alien technology for sure. So there was room for about eight, did you say about 8 or 9 of those units or chairs or devices?
Easily. I just have an image of a wall where there's 8 to 10 chairs in a row. So I don't have too much other memories, except there's a memory that I don't know of yet. It's of a black, it's in a dark area. It's like a black pod. And I feel, but I don't know, have information on it yet, but I feel it has something to do with me and my body and how this time thing works. It may be potentially where the other body is grown, or I'm in there and I have another body, or however that works. I don't know that yet.
Okay. Well, that's something certainly to explore. Now, I know you mentioned to me that one of the interesting things about this, this space station, let's call it, was that you felt that maybe it had been sort of refitted for bigger people, that the hallways were very small and maybe smaller ETs had used it at one time.
Well, it looked like for the amount of people in the main hallways, you almost walking right behind each other, one group going, let's say, straight ahead, another group coming the other way. And to get into your room or come out in the hallways, you better be quick and get in line. But there's other hallways, on the side, let's say, after one of the training flights. In that area, the hallway is, there's lots of room to move around because that's a special area. And in that area after the flight, there was a machine where the information from my flight was fed in, and I got feedback on how well I did.
And was there you were in fact being graded in a sense, on your training mission, I guess, right? By this sort of like ATM kind of thing.
Yeah, it I don't know how the remember how the information got in, but it looked like there was a bar, say number four or five bars, one bar on top, for example, for something, and underneath it was a bar going 75-80% of it. Another thing, there are some words I forget, and there is a bar, and I assume that's for like this is what you had to do on
mm-hmm.
your flight, and
mm-hmm.
and beneath it was my what I actually did. 70-90% whatever.
Yeah. Wow. And do you, during this experience, Carl, do you have any conscious memories of any of the, I know someone greeted you in the beginning, but any of the instructors, were we dealing really with humanoids, or was this an ET humanoid joint project? Did you have some instructors that looked like maybe they were hybrids, or what was kind of going on there?
The only memories I have is of people is they look human. Now,
mm-hmm.
the person who greeted our group, he was not human.
Yeah.
Gray, tall, something like that. But there's been another person, the person who helped us with the getting out of the body. He was definitely gray, but had more of a human look.
I see.
Something of a human look also.
Yeah. Wow. So this, is there anything else that you think would be? Were there any female cadets, if I may use that word, flight
yes.
cadets, or what? There were.
Yes. Yes. But I have so little, and each time I go into that area, it's pushing to get out. It's as if part of me is saying you shouldn't be doing this.
I wonder why. I wonder what's forbidden or controversial about that.
Yes.
Amazing. Well, pardon me, what?
It was amazing.
It was amazing. It is. Well,
yeah.
That is incredible. Wes, do you have anything to add there about Carl's experience on the Death Star? I guess is what it'll say. A large metallic orb that's been refitted, and we're training cadets. And
well, my gosh, I know I've been on craft, particularly when I was younger. In childhood, nothing like that at all. One of the things that interests me, and I wish we had more time to get into it tonight, is, and Leslie, you and I have talked about this, is basically this, that when they want to, let's say, suppress or hide or make inaccessible our memories, they are experts at it.
Yeah. They're very good at it, but I still believe it's only temporary. I do not believe that memories can be suppressed forever. And I think that we've talked about this before. I think some memories are time-dated, that you're allowed to remember and have recall after a certain period of time. We don't know why that would be, but it certainly kind of seems to be the case. But I know, Carl, you've told me before, you get a kind of a sensation when there's some memory you're not supposed to really explore, like what you just described to me, you really get a feeling that they don't want you to look at it. Is that the case?
Yes. Like, you're going through, you're remembering, and suddenly it's a dead end. It stops.
Mm-hmm.
Or in one case, not a lot of time, we had a special type of link. I mean, I talked about it before. I don't know if we were there physically or just energy or just being shown. But we went to a spot on Mars. It's a pyramid-type building. It's huge. It's beautiful. But we flew into the bottom hangar. It was huge. And we definitely got the feeling and heard that we should not be there. And then we were back, and this technology released us, and wow, it was amazing.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I'm so sorry we had such a great time talking to you tonight and talking to Todd, who was so generous to call in and share his story. And let's not make it so long the next time
okay.
you come and join us, because you're just a delight. And I thank you so much for your honesty and your openness. Wes, I thank you for your honesty and your openness. And okay, you gentlemen are really doing wonderful work by sharing your experiences and giving a lot of support to a lot of individuals. So thank you both so much, and I will see both of you very, very soon. But for now, we're just going to say good night. So good night, Carl.
Good night.
Good night, Wes.
Good night, good night, Leslie. Good night, Carl.
All right, you both take
and
care.
See you,
and
Todd.
We'll Yes, and thank you, Todd, too. Good night to you as well. Good night, everyone.
Bye,
remember,
Todd.
We are not alone, and we'll see you next time on Contact. Next week, we have another experience. You're joining us. See you at 9 o'clock next Sunday night. Bye for now. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Contact Radio with Leslie Mitchell Clark and co-host Wes Roberts. Please join us every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time as we explore ufology and beyond. And remember, we are not alone.